leasing, the terms of creation, valuation operator. So it's, and that's done for the W protocol in section 4.2.1 explicitly. So you just repeat those steps for this instead of W, and you'll see that's all you need for that part of the problem. For the last part, all you really need is well, we haven't got there by next Wednesday, I can tell you, but it's basically all you're looking for there is the relationship between matrix elements and the S matrix. And so what you want to use there is the equation 3.2.5 and 3.2.6 gives the S matrix in terms of 3.2.4 gives the S matrix in terms of matrix M, and then 3.2.6 gives M in terms of matrix elements of the Hamiltonian, the first term of which is what you want to evaluate for this particular system. So it's just taking a matrix element, creating a relation operator. It looks worse than it is.
Do we know what theta means to?
We can make it today. So one possibility would be the Wednesday of the last week. That leaves 3 or 4 days for the Christmas.
So how are people who aren't us getting them to you? Because you're across the hall from us, but not everyone else.
Yeah, so that's a Wednesday. So either I come in on a Wednesday, that Wednesday, or I somehow arrange for perimeter to mail us back. So the deadline will be a hard deadline. You have to be, because whatever the logistics is of me getting the assignment will be something which will be relying on them all being there on that day. So.
Do you have perimeter, I mean, all three of the copy machines have standard email functions?
Huh?
So you can just put your problems up and
I'm sorry, I think I'll have like 16 yeah. more pages. I already sure. have like 35 pages.
And I don't want to print them. So it's really hard copy could be what I was looking for, otherwise it could be a nightmare for me. Okay, at all. But it shouldn't be a big deal. I guess the bigger problem will be the people from Westbrook, because you're not going to be coming in for classes anymore. So I'll talk to Alice about how to do that. Maybe just get you to get the mail to courier from there directly to headmaster. That's probably the way to do it. But I'll tell you next class what happened there. Any other questions? Yeah, whatever the Wednesday is of that week. That would be unless people were rejected. And there was you had the conflict issue for next term, but did that get resolved? If it was Wednesday's next term?
So didn't get resolved. So we emailed and we got a response back saying they can't do anything because they have no official time for your class right now. And so
can you tell us the official time, then we can start?
Yeah. Okay, so how does one tell us the official time?
The official time of all day.
Okay. Yeah, is it say
that GB and means it's the official time of my class is?
Okay,
I have no idea.
How do I make it official?
Yeah,
I think it's more complicated than that. I bet you have to like tell the graduate studies, whoever the registrar or whoever puts it in the computer system, if this class has a time, so that it's official according to the university.
Yeah, so Jalman is the guy who needs to get next. He's the guy who's the professor. So
I think it also involves blood samples.
So definitely Jalman is the guy. So, okay. So let me write that stuff. So you said the official time. AEW needs to put a way to get the assignment. Okay. So we're cracking away on this writing going around and out in terms of the mass basis. And I'm going to cut to the chase on the Higgs terms. And the things that haven't run out yet are the gauge couplings for the fermions to the gauge bosons and the gauge bosons of the ones themselves. And I'm going to specifically look at the ones for the couplings of the W to the Z boson to the fermion, because those are the ones that are the best studied. And that's where the most interesting things happen. So that's where you see there's an interesting thing that happens as you go from the basis that we started off with, which transforms in a simple way under SE2 plus C1 to the mass basis. If you look at the strong interactive couplings, the gluons coupling with fermions, then you'll see that they behave much like the Higgs interactive, that they take a simple form. They don't really change when you do the transformations from the mass basis to the mass basis from the ones that transform under SE2 plus C1. So what I do for the Z boson is very similar to what happens to the gluon, so I won't do it again twice. So I'm going to focus on these two things. So that'll be the for historical reasons, this is called the neutral current. So the starting point, those things all came from the gauge kinetic terms, right? So the fermion kinetic terms. We had minus 1/2 L bar E slash L minus 1/2 E bar E slash E minus 1/2 Q bar D slash Q. And I'm not so interested in the partial. I'm interested in the gauge piece here. So we have the d mu on the left, d mu l was the left partial l minus I. I like to write up the. Gamma left L was transformed as a singlet under SE3, a doublet under SE2, and its hypercharge was minus 1/2 to make the neutrino, because L was the neutrino electron. We wanted that to be neutral, we wanted that to be charged -1, where the electric charge was the third component of the SE2 plus the hypercharge. So gamma left P was a singlet, and then we had charge +1. Gamma left Q was a triplet, a doublet, hypercharge 1/6. So the top slot was 1/2 plus 1/6 plus 2/3. That was the S port. So that Q was down. And of course, this Q was not that Q. And the left U was an anti-triplet, a singlet, and so this thing was the up quark. The up quark has charged 2/3, but the left-handed piece of this was the right-handed piece of this was the up quark. The left-handed piece then has to be the anti-up quark, which has charged -2/3. And same thing, this was an anti-triplet singlet and had charged +1/3. So having said that, we can write down all these equivalent derivatives. Hypercharge in this case is -1/2. So we wanted minus I G1 times -1/2 B mu L.
Yeah?
No, I kind of I should have probably written that out, the one that goes up. -I/2 G2 times pollinate disease, a WA mu cell. And that's it because there's no missing in singlet under SU3. This is a singlet and then an RC2 and it's a singlet and RC3 and so on. So in general, I can do them all if I take, the pattern here is that we've got, there's always the left-handed doublet and then we have right-handed singlets and we didn't have our neutrino. One of the problems you do the neutrino where it's a singlet and it's got hydrogen trichloride zero. We can kind of do this in one fell swoop if we just keep this thing here as being a variable and keep T3 as being a variable in what we're doing here. So let's make sure I use the same notation as I use in the book here. I guess before I do that, I should probably focus on the. I'm going to do this in the opposite order from the book. I'm going to do the neutral current first. Because there's two things that we have to do, right? We have to keep track of the fact that these fermions that are appearing here are related to the ones that diagonalize the masses by the unitary transformation that I did last class. But also, it's true that these gate bosons here are related to the ones that are mass eigenstates by rotation. That B and W3 get related in the Z photon, and W1 and W2 are the complex guys that are complex W. So actually, maybe I'll do it the way the book does. We'll do the W's first. So we focus on the W's. Pieces that are going to involve that will be, there's a piece, we'll call it a charge term around here, and that's going to be, we've got a minus, that only comes from the doublets, the L and the Q terms there. So we've got minus 1/2, E bar, transpose. And then the D slash, we can just pick off the W piece here, so it's got there's an overall minus 1/2 for flat out, and then we've got a minus I over 2. D2, and if I write the Pauli matrix times W out, we have diagonal, and then the W1 and W2 are off diagonal, so we have W1 mu minus I, W2 mu, W1 mu plus I, W2 mu, times gamma mu, because that was the slash part of it. And I guess the convention I was using was I was calling curly E the thing before I went to, when I was talking about Majorana spinners, and I called little E the rack spinner that we were doing today. And there's a. Now, this is not quite right yet because in the covariant derivative here, it's only the left-handed part is what I've written down here. So I should, in the D slash, let me use that 1 is equal to gamma left plus gamma right. So what I wrote here was appropriate if I had a. So let me write the gamma mu on this side. And the gamma left here. And then what I'd have to add is also now the gamma right term. So that's the gamma right term. Which will be the complex conjugate because these. Fermions are Majorana. The way you look at figure out what right-hand piece does is you just take the complex conjugate and multiply by the anti-symmetric matrix, which takes the left-handed to right-handed thing. And all that happens is that all these i's get changed to minus I when you complex conjugate. and the poly matrices get converted back to poly matrices due to the multiplication of the matrix. So,
when you need to switch it, there's an attack on that matrix. I mean, truly, it doesn't.
Well, it doesn't fit with this one, is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, it antecedes it all. That's, but the actual matrix doesn't.
This one here you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, they act in different spaces, right? This acts on the stimulus, and this is acting on the stimulus. So I haven't been running, these guys are able to work on the stairs, so you got to keep track of that.
Yeah.
The only thing that this doesn't commute with is the gamma left. But really, it was really a 1, and what I'm doing is running 1 plus gamma left plus gamma right. I could have done that on either side, but I'm choosing to do it here because it needs to make contact with the rotor there. So I guess I should close the bracket or something. And then there's a similar thing for the quarks, right? There's a minus 1/2 for our gamma bar. And these diagonal ones, I'll follow them when we talk about the W3 and B, which will be the Z. And I might as well also put in, I suppressed, I didn't write here, there was a generation index here, right, which I could have written. And we were always free to make a diagonal in generation index in the kinetic term, because that was something which you would always redefine the fields to ensure that was true. And so I'm going to write that again here, just because once we diagonalize the masses, we have to worry that we are going to be doing a rotation in this space. So again, we have the gamma right term. Start closing the bracket. And this is just the complex term. That's the. The reason I'm writing is that it's not always easy to get it because it's just a really complex number that we have to pull. So now what? So we don't really have to worry too much about the, you know, we had written the mass eigenstate in terms of the complex field W mu. The definition we used was we called this thing W mu. Given that definition, it's safe that I can just write this as the 1/√2. There's a 1/√2 running around, which is coming from this definition, is all a really dry entropy. So you can just call this √2 W mu, and this is √2 W star mu. So if I group the W terms, I've got this is not a sign. Let me try to write this wiggly thing so you don't see anything with the sign. So we have a minus I times a minus I, and minus 1 is a plus I over the root 2 will make this a root 2, so we'll have G2 over 2 root 2 W mu. U bar M curly E bar M gamma mu gamma left. Sorry. I'm trying to do too many steps at once. I'm focusing on this term. This term, if I do the matrix multiplication here, this term will link this guy with this guy, right? So it'll have an electron on the right and a neutrino on the left. The diagonal ones would have linked electron to electron to the neutrino. This one down here will link the neutrino to the electron. Right, so let me write those out separately now. So I've got neutrino bar, M, gamma mu, times gamma left, electron M. And the other term here is, let me keep all the ones that are multiplying a W. Not quite, because. No, actually, you're probably right. It's not acceptable. I want to make sure I don't do something stupid for now. The issue that I'm worried about is when you take Thomas tiny to this term, you're going to take a W to a W star, that's true, you're going to have a sign involved here, but you're going to take also gamma left and gamma right. The Thomas tiny to these terms tend to be these terms. So the issue is if you want to argue that this is a Thomas tiny to this, you have to really argue that.
It's going through, I mean, the gamma left is actually going through when gamma mu and when beta, so it changes twice, right? I mean, the gamma phi anti-commutes with gamma mu and anti-commutes with beta. So it's going to still be gamma left, you know, because there's two matrices.
It's going to end up being gamma left, it's true, but the properties we're going to be using are basically the psi bar, gamma mu. It comes down to psi bar m, psi 1, psi 2, complex conjugate, it's psi bar 1, m, psi 2, you know, plus or minus, where plus or minus, so plus or minus is plus for all the things of the gamma phi, so that's the scalar, the vector, and tensor, and minus for the pseudoscalar and the axial vector. And then the symmetry one, plus or minus psi bar 2 and psi 1. Or the plus or minus in this case is plus for the pseudoscalar, the scalar of the pseudoscalar and the axial vector, and it's minus for the vector and the tensor. So we're interested in the case where m is a vector or an axial vector. And so the complex conjugate is just, the complex conjugate is changing this, the complex conjugate takes a left to the right just like it did for the scalar. But the freedom we have now is that we can also change the order. And the thing to be careful about in this case is that when you change the order, the axial, for the scalar, the pseudoscalar and the scalar did the same thing when we changed the order, and who's on which side. But the axial vector and the vector do the opposite thing now. So what that means is that when you complex conjugate left to go to the right, but I can also change the order. So I have a new bar E here.
Even if you don't take into consideration that they're Majorana, just doing the complex conjugating, you'll get the other one.
Well, all roads will lead to Rome, right? But I want to do it this way because this is the way I'm going to not screw up the board. So maybe the thing to do is just to let me write every term out and see if it's explicit stuff. So to do that, I'll just write everything out. So there's going to be a W mu term. So now what I'm doing is I'm writing this guy here. So I've got nu bar m gamma mu gamma left e m. I won't write this guy because I'm going to write over here a w star term eventually. But then there's a w term in the right hand of these two. So we'll have plus. So the one that was over here, it'll be the complex conjugate of the one that was here. So that's going to be. So let me write it out. So if I complex conjugate everything here, I've got minus 1 half u bar m, u bar m transpose, plus I over 2, u 2, gamma mu, matrix, right now I've got w star here and w here, gamma right, times u m. So if I want to follow the W, I'm following that term now. So I've got plus I kind of the minus is the minus. And so now I'm picking off the thing at the bottom left. That's the thing that's going to multiply, matrix multiply this one with this one, right? So I'll have an E bar, M, gamma mu, gamma right, mu M. So that's this W and this W. And there's a similar one for quarks now. So we'll have plus the same thing where mu goes to the U and E goes to V. I guess that's called that curve. Same spirit that I was writing that curve on the X helps the U. And just so I can continue the equation, let me just write that from here. The W star. Here we've got the plus already, so we've got E bar M M mu gamma left mu N. Then the complex conjugate is going to have an overall minus sign because of the I in the front. And then we'll get these guys in the opposite order. Same order with the gamma rights. Sorry, opposite order with the gamma right. Opposite order because we're now looking at the top right here. So it'll be mu bar M gamma mu, gamma right, E. And then we'll have the quark one. So mu goes to U and electron goes to E. So now the point is that if I change the order of these guys to make them look, I want to see they're acting independent of one another. If I change the order, remember what's happening is that the axial vector goes to axial vector, but the vector goes to minus vector. So that means that gamma left is going to go to minus gamma right, and gamma right is going to go to minus gamma left, because the 1 is changing sign and the gamma 5 is not changing sign. So this is the same thing as plus u bar m, gamma mu, gamma left, e, m, which is what we already had here. So really this is a factor 2 of all of these terms. And the same thing's true across the board. So if I just group them, I have I, 2 or 2, 2. There's an overall factor of 2 I can take in, so that's that. W mu, U bar M, what do you do? Gamma left, E. Plus, now I'll just do the quark ones. We've got U bar M, what do you do? And then this literally now is the complex conjugate of that. It has to be because it's real, and the complex conjugate of W has to be W star. So what's happening is that there was in the four terms when you have the fermion pairs were complex, the W boson was complex, and so I'm writing it out explicitly here so you can see that the complex conjugate of the fermion pairs is something which is doing a factor two. Focusing on the W's that's keeping track of the thing and it's not what's coming in.
So, looking at the quarks, what about the U, what are the U bars, the U's and the D's, what are they? Capital U's and capital B's?
Yeah.
What are they again?
You mean, you're talking about the.
Is there also doublets, right?
Is that there are doublets? No, there are singlets.
Oh,
under SU2. They're anti cryptlets under SU3, but singlets under SU2.
Okay, it's just because you wrote. Okay, so you wrote.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, you still see the one.
I wrote the one. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so, and I have to say, I'm bothered by the two, Sarah.
I was going to say, where did the two go?
Oh, I know where it's going, because this, I'm going to rewrite this in terms of ones and gamma times in a second. That's fine. Every year I teach this, I get bothered by this, too. it's like the fishbowl going around the bowl, you know. All right, so, now the thing is, we can, for free, we've successfully identified the dependence on the mass eigenstate for the bosons. We just now have to do the same thing for the mass eigenstate for the fermions. And in this case, it's actually pretty straightforward. It's remember the way we diagonalized the fermion masses. So the fermion masses were diagonalized. We were doing a rotation on this M index. So we had I want to make sure I get this rotation again. It's just a question of whether I'm going to write U where I wrote U star before or not. And it was, I think I did it for the right-handed fields because I think I had written six fields in terms of right-handed fields. Yes. No, I didn't turn left on this. Yeah, U was brought in, U was right. So we have gamma left EM was given in terms of some matrix U sub E MN times gamma left EM, right? And then the right-handed guy, gamma right EM, was some new field. It's E sub E MN. So I did this, the redefinition, and I did the same thing for U and for D. There was the U sub U, and there was the U sub D. And there was for U and D, there was the V sub U and the V sub D. And these are all unitary matrices, was the point. And they were unitary to keep the kinetic terms not changed. And they had been designed to diagonalize the mass terms. And I don't get the same thing for the neutrinos here on this side. Gamma left. And I chose that we didn't have to diagonalize the neutrino masses, so I just chose to rotate these guys the same way as these guys. So we didn't, we have the freedom to do anything we want here. And so, so maybe what I'll do is let me write it in the. I didn't talk about this before, so now I'm going to say something explicitly. So I was not forced to do a redefinition like this because there was no neutrino mass to diagonalize. But we're free to do this redefinition. It's just that it doesn't do anything for us for mass terms. It leaves the kinetic terms invariant if this is unitary, but it doesn't do any make progress by diagonalizing the mass term. And I'm going to use this freedom to simplify what we get here. But I don't have the same freedom for the quarks, because for the quarks there was a mass term for the up and down quarks both. And so these matrices have been chosen to diagonalize masses, whereas this one is so far up for grabs because it hasn't chosen to diagonalize anything. So now if we plug that into the bilinears here, you can see that because there's a gamma left in the for the mass term, what happened was you didn't have the gamma mu between the two fermions. And so we ended up getting, in terms of left-handed pieces, it was like left-handed piece transpose left-handed piece. And so the combination of matrices that appeared in the mass term was things like UE transpose UE. If you had an E on both sides. We typically had an E and a curly E and a capital E. So we've got things like UE transpose mass term BE, and that was what we managed to diagonalize the mass terms. But in this case, because of the extra gamma mu between the neutrino and the electron, there's a gamma matrix hidden in the bar. So there's a total of there's an even number of gamma matrices between the neutrino and the electron. So we've got a left pairing here. But it's so maybe I should break it up. So in spinner space, remember, we have a new RM. The simplest way to think about it is to think of that as being new bar dagger theta. And so new bar M gamma mu EM is new M dagger theta mu and left. And what you're going to get is the way the left-handed field transforms here. If I bring the left-handed guy projector to this side, it changes to gamma right when I go past the first gamma matrix. It goes to gamma left again when I go past the second one. But this is complex conjugated. So I'm going to get the matrix that rotates these guys on the right-hand side and the matrix that rotates these guys adjoint on the left-hand side, where these guys are both left-handed things. So I'm always going to be talking about the U matrices and never about the V matrices, because I'm never getting any things here involving the capital U's, E's, or E's. I'd always have the things that were the doublets here, because those are the things that talk to W bosons. So the charge current interaction is going to go to, in terms of these new variables, the mass diagonal variables, it's going to be pi over 2, pi over 2, mu. Nu bar prime M gamma mu gamma left. We'll have so we had the neutrino matrix dagger, and then we had on the right hand side we had the electron matrix M times the new electron matrix. Close the bracket. Actually, let's do it in brackets. Let's leave that one off. And then there's a similar thing for the quarks. So we'll have a U bar M gamma mu on the left. U up dagger, U down, M. So in this case, since I haven't chosen the use of nu, yet, I might as well choose it to be equal to U sub E, and then this becomes, again, this will become delta MN if you choose U sub nu equals U sub E, which we're free to do because U sub nu wasn't chosen by anything yet. But here, we're stuck with this matrix, because the freedom to choose these U's has been chosen to diagonalize both the up and the down force masses, and those masses were different. If they'd been the same matrix that we're diagonalizing, we could have expected these matrices to be the same, but the up and down force masses are different because we broke SE2 cross E1 invariant, so the two things in a doublet don't have to have the same masses. And because of that, this thing is some matrix. Let's call it V or V star. And again, I can't remember. Let me just finish with that and then ask the question. The convention is that V is the one that's in the right term, so I'm going to call this V dagger. What we know about this matrix is that it's the product of two unitary matrices, so it's unitary. So this is a unitary matrix, and it was for a long time called the KM matrix for Kobayashi and Moskawa. But there was a historical precursor done by Kabibo, so now it's called the Kabibo Kobayashi Moskawa matrix.
Between the primes and non-primes, which ones are the mass diagonal?
The primes are the mass diagonal. So now we've got our thing in terms of mass diagonal things. And you can also see that for free, we can replace these guys by the Dirac guys. I can replace that by EM for free, because the gamma left explicitly, gamma left acting on curly E was the same as gamma left acting on Dirac E. And same thing through here. So we can for free replace these guys by the Dirac things. Just because of the explicit gamma left acting on those fields. So the final way I'm going to write this is in terms of the Dirac fields. And it's normally what you do is you tend to write this thing without the, it's 1 plus gamma 5 rather than gamma left. That's what it got from there.
So if in the realistic case where neutrinos would have mass, would these can we still choose new?
No, so what would happen if you were to do this, if you were to take the kids with right-handed freedom and throw them in mass, then you would have used up the freedom to change those U's to get the mass to be diagonal, and so you would have had another matrix like that one here, and that's called the PMNS, I guess, I think it's the names I forgot. It's Platicorvo and other guys. But that's one of the important things that changes, that you really have these transitions. And the evidence for neutrino masses is really evidence for the existence of matrix like this, because what they're really saying is that there's processes where a neutrino is created in association with a charged thing, but it's then destroyed at later times in association also with a charged thing, but it's a different charged thing. So the fact that you've got something off-diagonal here is exactly what they're seeing, that you can produce a neutrino with an electron and then destroy it with a muon. And when this is a delta MN, you can never do that, because whatever is being produced here with electron is always being destroyed with something else. So the evidence, what they're really seeing is this matrix, more than what you're seeing evidence for is that matrix more than the direct evidence from mass. Kind of. It's getting better. The evidence for mass is getting better and better, but it's not quite there yet. So the traditional thing is to write this thing out as 1 plus gamma 5, so we can do that.
What do you mean by evidence for mass?
Let me come back to that in a second. Let me just finish writing this. So I'm not going to write the W star because I don't want to write V dagger here. That's just a convention. And so I'm going to write the complex conjugate term. And that's just going to involve everybody changing being transposed once. So this will become E bar M mu gamma left M plus E bar M. Let's do it again. 1 plus gamma 5.
Would that be a minus side of the
function? Let me finish writing here for it. Yeah, there's probably a minus sign up front here. Let me just V. And you want the minus sign for the complex conjugate. No money if I haven't finished writing it. So that's the traditional way of writing it, where you have the KM thing is traditionally written in terms of the W star. And this is historically called the V minus A interaction sometimes, because of the plus sign there. And that's just because the people who wrote it down were using conventions where left-handed meant 1 minus gamma 5 rather than 1 plus gamma 5. And if you want it right that way, you can always put the gamma matrix on the right-hand side here rather than the left-hand side. It's kind of a little bit like that. So what that tells you is that the processes involving neutrinos and electrons in the standard model are always, the neutrino is associated with electron. Nothing can ever change electron type, muon type, and tau type. You have no processes which are going to change them into each other. Whereas here, because if this matrix is generic and experimentally the matrix appears to be, it's not generic, but it has no zeros in it. So this matrix V is typically, something, there's an overall
minus gamma 5.
I've done this as a.
It still has to be gamma left, because the right part of these things would be.
It always be gamma left, but what I'm worried about now is that W is normally defined to be the guy who destroys a particle of negative charge. But the electron destroys a particle of negative charge too. So there's the problem with that interaction is that it's destroying two particles of negative charge, so it's not conserving charge conservation. So that
means the electron bar. This is the problem.
No, but if you look up there, they've got W mu electron, and it's a new bar. And here it's the same thing. You could say that this is creating an electric charge, and the negative electron charge is creating it. And I think what's happened is that I've misidentified here. This is the one that is conventionally the W. So that's the one that destroys the thing of the negative electric charge. And I'm being picky with this because the convention is when you write the Kobayashi-Moskow matrix down, it's the rows are labeled by the up quarks and the columns are labeled by the down quarks. So I want to make sure you get that right in your notes. So this is everything here. That's how you can tell you're doing it right, is asking for charge conservation to all the vertices. So if I've written in terms of the W now, I actually have it right. This should have been... So what I wanted to write was to stop here. I think that's... I didn't want to write this. But this is now a B. That's the definition of B. So there's many ways of writing a B, but the point of this is that the row is being labeled by the up quarks and the column being labeled by the down quarks. So the take to the bank one is just to write it as B, U, S, B, 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 term, down, B, term, S, B, term, B, B, top, down, top, S. It's convenient. It's worth keeping track of the gamma fives and the. It's always worth keeping track of the symmetries of various interactions. And one of the symmetries that I haven't followed in great detail yet is things like parity and charge conjugation times parity, or which is the same thing as time reversal. And the statement of the notes that the book gives you is the definition of what parity, how parity acts on the various fields, which it inherits from the way it acts in the particles. And you know how it acts on the particles because in the fields because parity and time reversal are things that are automorphisms of a Lorentz algebra. If I tell you how the Lorentz algebra is being represented, and then I'm telling you also things about how these things are being represented. And the short version of it is that you can choose conventions such that the invariance under parity corresponds to the things that are transforming, that are changing sign under parity, are the things of the gamma fives. That's kind of where the names are coming from. Pseudo-scalar and axial vector, you remember, were the ones that were defined to transform in the Lorentz transformation with a determinant of the Lorentz transformation in front of the transformation rule. And so that's the that's negative one for parity. Parity transformation is just you take all the coordinates, you know, x, y, and z, and you reflect them. So the determinant of that transformation, so this is the Lorentz transformation, you know, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, or sorry, plus 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, as is time, space, space, space. That has determinant minus 1. So things that were pseudoscalars or axial vectors are changing sign under that because they, in the transformation rule I wrote down for you in a previous lecture, had an overall determinant of lambda. But, and time reversal would be just the opposite of this. So time reversal would be the minus 1, and so things that have gamma fives in them are not parity invariant. That's the way I said that was wrong. If we had a term here with a gamma five or a one, we could always choose to make the W boson parity even or parity odd to make the thing invariant. The thing that makes this interaction not parity invariant is that we've got both the one and a gamma five. So there's no way to assign parity. You get to assign a plus or minus charge to any of these fields as a parity quantum number because it's a symmetry, and so it's got a conservation. It's the example that I showed you before where you had a unitary transformation that squares to one, and so it's Hermitian. And so you can think of it as labeling states. So you're free to assign signs to these fields to make everything invariant. But because you've got a 1 and a gamma 5 here, there's no choice of the signs that you can assign these fields, which can make this whole thing invariant. You could have, if you had a gamma 5 here, made this thing parity odd. If you had the 1 here, you could have made it parity even, but you can't do both. And so the presence of both these things is a sign that parity is violated by this interaction. So, and then I'm telling you that because I want to say something about this matrix in a second. So, so you're supposed to notice that the presence of both M of 5 and 1 means this is not very right. And it's kind of maximally parity violating in the sense that the, if we had 1 plus epsilon gamma 5, then it would be breaking parity, but the parity breaking could be made very small, or could be controlled by the size of epsilon. Here they're both the same size, the 1 and the gamma 5.
Oh, sorry. Maybe it's just because I don't see it as well as you. But in the complex quantities, are there going to be gamma L's or gamma R's?
Here it's going to be, again, gamma L's.
Okay. So then, it, just the fact that it's left-handed dominated, you sort of think of that as being parity, even if it's more left-handed.
That's what I think of it. I mean, it was built in right from the very beginning when I said the charge assignment, right? Because I made the left-handed guy doublets and the right-handed guy singlets, and so that's kind of why you're seeing that it's linked again left-handed. Now, for time reversal invariants, the statement is, and CP invariants. It's possible to choose your fields in such a way that the basic thing that's going on is the statement is that if I can make these coefficients this matrix real, then this interaction would be CP invariant or time reversal invariant.
What?
That's so I'm not explaining it. So the thing is that what's missing is I need to tell you exactly what time reversal transformation is. And I think that'll take too long for where I want to go. But in cartoon form, one would think, what is it? Time reversal is anti-unitary. So every time it goes by a complex thing, it changes its complex conjugate. And if you want the Lagrangian to be invariant, you might worry about this I. But this I, there's an I hidden in the new bars because that was I gamma zero. So there's an overall I that you have to
put gamma zero. Beta zero is for the real unitary.
Right, but the issue is if I take if I do a time reversal transformation on that whole pair of two bar gamma mu gamma left t, does that change sign and it turns out it does. So this I actually is not making it complex. And that's kind of why I'm skating over this thing, because it's really in those notes I gave you, the transformation roles under time reversal and parity are derived. And you can kind of see in that case that what they amount to is what you're amounts to asking is for the coefficient of once this I is excluded, the coefficients in this interaction there, and all the other interactions we looked at, what we're asking is that they be real. And I'm just telling you that because we can decide. Where I want to go is I want to know how many parameters there are here. Is it really 9 parameters? This is 9 complex numbers, but the condition that B dagger equals 1 says that there's actually 9 conditions on it, so there's really 9 real numbers in there. But I want to know, are there really 9 numbers there? Can I redefine the fields, for instance, to get rid of some of the numbers? And related to that is, how many of these numbers are phases? So if I got 9 real numbers in here, could I have made, am I always free to make these into 9, you know, can I make this into an orthogonal matrix rather than a unitary matrix, where every entry of the matrix is real? Because if I've done that, then what I'm really saying is that these interactions have to be CP invariant. And so there's a question as to how much freedom do we have to redefine fields to simplify this and to make it take a special form. Given that we don't want to ruin the mass terms that we have, and we don't want to ruin any other interactions we've written down so far. So the question is, how many parameters are there? B. Another question is, that's question 1, how many parameters would there be if B were real? So that would be the CP invariant. And the third question is, how much freedom do we have to simplify the matrix by redefining fields?
predefined fields. Simplify. And so remove some of the parameters. So the counting parameters is easy enough. It's you know, so for answer one, you know, an n by n, we're interested in a 3x3 matrix, but I want to make a point about what would have happened if we had two generations or if we had four generations. So an n by n unitary matrix, contains n squared real parameters. And that's the, there's n squared complex numbers in the matrix, and then the B vector B is imposing n squared real conditions. And so that's why you look at n squared real parameters. So that's what you would expect in a generic n by n matrix. Now, if you ask how many of those things are phases or are making this thing complex, what we should do is we should count how many entries there are in a real unitary matrix. A real unitary matrix is another way of saying an orthogonal matrix. So I want to know the same counting for an orthogonal matrix, and then the difference will be the number of things that are phases in this matrix B. So n by n orthogonal, that is to say real unitary matrix contains. Well, how do you count that? Well, our orthogonal matrix, in the same way that the unitary matrix can only be written as e to the I times a Hermitian matrix, one way to think of this n squared is that that's also, if you think of the conditions, a Hermitian n by n matrix has got n squared parameters in it because it was n squared complex parameters, but then I had to actually pass it to be equal to its complex constants, its adjoint. So all the guys in the diagonal had to be real, and all the guys above the diagonal had to be complex conjugates to the guys below the diagonal, so you can see the n squared real things there. The same story for an orthogonal matrix, that's e to an anti-symmetric matrix, right? If I want O transpose O to be 1, then if I exponentiate, to think of it as being exponential something, this thing has to have the property that A transposes minus A, in the same way that this thing, IH dagger, has to be minus IH. And so it's easy to count the number of things in an anti-symmetric matrix. An anti-symmetric matrix has to be 0 along the diagonal, and everybody here is minus everybody here, so we're just really counting how many things that were here. So how many are there? There's there's 1/2 n minus 1 things up here, right? So n were 1, it would be 0. If n were 2, we would have 1. If n were 3, we'd have 3 times 2 over 2 is 3, and so on. So it's true for 3 things, it's true for all of them, by induction. It had to be a quadratic formula in n at some level, and so once you check 3, you know the answer. So the sentence is being picked up here. So now the difference between these two numbers, so an n by n unitary matrix contains n squared minus 1/2 n minus 1 phases, let's call it P. And if we simplify that down, then we get n squared minus 1/2 n squared plus 1/2 n squared. And then we get minus minus, it's going to be 1/2 n plus 1. So the reason I'm focused on phases is question 3. What freedom do we still have to redefine the matrices? You know, we don't have any more than we had the freedom. We would not screw up the kinetic terms if we redefine these fields by some unitary transformation of the rotated the fermions among themselves. So we had been considering things like if we had the electron, muon, tau, let's say, we were allowing ourselves to have a 3x3 matrix which delineated these guys. This is what we were calling, if we did the left-handed piece, this was what we were calling U to B. So it's a 3x3 unitary thing. But once we diagonalize the mass matrix, we have to also demand that this transformation not screw that up. And if our mass matrix if the mass matrix is not, you know, once it's diagonal, it has, you know, m electron, m mu, and m tau. These are all distinct masses. There's no two of them are alike. The only transformation like this, which still preserves this,
Given that I'm also rotating the right-handed bias, so the E's, remember we're going to have B's of E. The things that are invariant under these kind of rotations that don't shuffle the generations are purely diagonal unitary matrices. So the most general redefinitions, which are still possible, which don't screw up things we've already used them for, so it doesn't screw up the kinetic terms, it doesn't screw up the mass terms, and because it doesn't screw up the mass terms, it also doesn't screw up the Higgs couplings and all the couplings we talked about to this point. Still possible. Is a diagonal. I first of all have to rotate the left and right-handed pieces together because I don't want to ruin the mass terms. So the mass terms relate to the right-handed person. So I have to do VE is equal to UE. And then I have to also choose that thing to be diagonal. Diagonal unitary matrix. And so then that's another way of saying I'm allowed to take all these Dirac fields and rotate them by a phase. So that preserves the mass term because it's just E bar E. But I there's no gamma 5s here, so I'm rotating now to the Dirac spinner the left and right piece the same way. And I'm forced to if I don't want to ruin the mass term. I can do that separately for the up quarks, the down quarks, and the neutrinos. Now I'm really interested in the quarks because that's where this matrix V is. So this says I'm free to redefine these things by a phase, but you can see that this interaction here, if I have quark bar times the same quark, that phase would drop out. But because I've got up quark and down quark, I can use the relative freedom to rotate an up and down quark to get rid of some of the phases that are in this matrix.
What are the subscripts on the last equation?
Okay, this is M. All right, there we go. This is gamma right. V should be M, N, E, N prime. So I've got a fair bit of freedom here to rotate quarks by phases, and I can use those phases to simplify this matrix. But if I rotate all these quarks with the same phase, if I make alpha equals beta, say for all M, then that wouldn't change anything, because then I'd get a cancellation between the phase here and the complex conjugate of the phase here. So, although it looks like I've got a choice of a phase for every fermion, one of them is actually not changing anything. And so there's one less freedom to redefine the matrix.
Why is it diagonal unitary? Just mean that
the
real diagonal?
If diagonal unitary means it's a phase along the diagonal, because it has to be that if I have a... Now, I have to satisfy U dagger U is equal to 1. But if U is equal to alpha, beta, gamma, then that says alpha star alpha.
Okay, sorry, that's right. Okay, I get it.
So the bottom line here is that there are n parameters that I can naively there would be n parameters I can remove. So let me write n and leave a space, parameters can be removed. And the space is for minus 1, because if I rotate them all by the same phase, I don't change anything. So I can't use that. I can't use an overall rotation of everybody by the same phase to simplify the matrix V, because it doesn't appear in the matrix V. That doesn't appear anywhere. That's the symmetry of the whole around it. So that means that although it looks like if we have n generations, it looks like we would have had 1/2 n plus 1 phases in the matrix, really, n minus one of those spaces I can get rid of by field redefinition, so they can't have any physical consequences. So this implies that n minus one of the n one half n minus one phases cannot have any physical consequences. And so, in particular, they cannot be responsible for CP product. So what's left is, so the physical phases is 1 half n.
Shouldn't it be a plus 1 half n plus 1?
Yeah, you're right. Should be this minus n minus 1. So if I've done this right, this should be, so we've got 1 half n squared. We've got then 1 half n, will be minus 1 half n. And then we've got plus 1. And that should be 1 half n minus 1, n minus 2. So it's 1 half n squared. We've got minus n, minus 2 n is minus 3, and hopefully that's somewhere around there. Minus n. Minus 2n, minus 3n, minus 3n over 2. So, did I screw this up over here? This was right because we checked it, right? Is the n equal to 1, we get 0. This is then right because we just did it. That's right. We have 1 half n minus n was minus 2.
It's 2n minus
1. Oh, 2n, right, because there's 2 there? Yeah, thank you. Right, so I was counting n in this case would be 3. That would be up, down, up, turn, top. But then I also had one for drain, bottom, down. Thank you, that helps. So we have 1 half n minus 2 n is minus 3 half n. And that'll work. So we've got 2 over 2. Good. All right. So in particular, you know, if n is even 1 or 2, there are no phases left. So that if you had two generations of quarks and leptons in the standard model, you would predict that physics is CP for certain. No physical phases. So that would mean that CP. You know, I haven't done the Z couplings yet, but you'll see that they also are real. So this is, if it's going to happen, it'll happen here. But for n equals 3, that says that we have one phase. One physical phase. In V. And that can break C. And break CP, but it predicts it's going to break it in a very, very specific way, because it's going to predict it, it's going to give you CP violation in a way which is related to how, to the reactions that are changing quark type. But if you have a reaction that takes an up quark to a down quark, or an up quark to a charm quark, you know, the same interactions that are describing the transitions between the kinds of quarks are also the ones that break CP. And so there's going to be a whole suite of relationships that you would expect to be true for the CP violating physics in the standard model, and which, as far as the experiment is concerned, has appeared to be true so far. So I told you that story to tell you this story. It's another way of writing this V that's very convenient is it's what's called the Wolfenstein parameterization.
So it's not an exact
What's that?
It's not exactly an exact way. You put all the
places. Yeah, it's not exactly. It's not literally in here, but it's up to, if it has small parameters in it, and up to sublinear terms and the small parameters in here. That's called the Wolfenstein parameterization after the famous video game. And so it's, because it summarizes what the measurements are. It just basically says that the pattern appears to be that things are close to being diagonal. So it's a 3x3 matrix. It's close to being diagonal, and this top 2x2 matrix is close to being orthogonal, too. So this is almost cosine theta, almost sine theta, almost minus sine theta. So the way that's been written, if theta had been small, you know, sine theta would be, you can think of that as being approximately theta, and cosine theta would be approximately 1 minus 1 half theta squared. So that's the way Wolfenstein wrote this. And then instead of theta, he uses lambda. Minus lambda, 1 minus lambda squared over 2. So that angle is historically called the Klebe angle, because the reason Klebe is on this matrix is that in the old days they thought there were two generations, and so the things that were appearing here were an orthogonal rotation, and that was the one that Klebe put in. So that's called the Klebe angle. It's not exactly true that this can be a cosine and a sine, but it's close enough for government work given the experimental errors. Now these off-diagonal guys are all
That means it would be a small phase. It's not exactly the okay.
You wouldn't
use the other ones.
Okay. Yeah, it's because of the third generation that you get the freedom parameter phase. So let me just write the way it's parameterized. So this is consistent with 1, 2 order lambda cubed, which is a lambda squared, times a. And then this is a lambda cubed, rho minus pi beta. And then the rest of these things are now being fixed by unitarity up to order lambda. So we've got lambda experimentally is basically 0.2. That's the size of this angle. So it's a small thing. You know, once you start taking several powers out, you're down to 10 minus 2 or 3 things here. So this is minus 8 lambda squared. And this is 1 minus 3 lambda cubed. 1 minus rho minus I. And so this is unitary up to order lambda cubed, but it's not unitary as an exact statement. So that's why it's approximate here. And the lambdas have been put in here because once they're in, so that's the small thing, a and rho and eta are basically order 1 things. And that's consistent with what you measure. So the pattern that you see here is that the farther you get off the diagonal, the more you're punched. So if the diagonal ones are dominated by the 1, the off-diagonal by 1 things are, if you mix the first with the second generation, it costs you a lambda, but if you mix the second with the third generation, it's going to cost you a lambda squared. If you mix the first with the third generation, it costs you a lambda cubed. So the farther you try and mix off the diagonal, the more you're punished, is the phenomenological statement. That's what the experiments say. All the complex stuff is in the bottom row and the top, and the left-hand row, because if we only had a 2x2 thing, we knew we could make it real. So the convention has been chosen to make these guys real. And that emphasizes that if you're going to have a process which violates CP, you have to involve the third generation somehow. And that's because that's the only way you've got a phase in the first place. And so, and that also shows you that it's going to be punished for free by these powers of lambda. And so CP violation in the world is seen to be weaker than parity violation. Parity violation was discovered in the 50s, but the CP violation was only discovered in the 60s because it's smaller. But it's not small in the standard model because the CP violating parameter eta is small. It's small because it happens that the CP violating parameters, which are order 1, are multiplied by other things which are known to be small for other reasons, to do with flavor changing. So whatever the physics is, why this matrix is not diagonal, and why the pattern is that the further you go up the diagonal, the smaller it is, that's the thing that makes CP violation small, just because the phases are all happen to be in this last thing. And so that's consistent with everything I've seen, as we'll see later on, when we look at CP violation. And that's probably a good place to stop.